Good morning. Are we enjoying it or enduring it? All right. Thank you for coming out last night. Last evening exceeded my wildest expectations. When you invite people, it's always a question. I couldn't get a count. I had been told 30 people, maybe. I think we had, I know we had 225 in the tent. A good number of those were our friends from the local community. I did speak with the leadership this morning, and they found, in their words, they felt very blessed with how it went, and were appreciative of in being able to interact with you. So I'm very happy about that. I never thought this would happen. For me, it is bordering the unthinkable. So God is definitely doing something in this area, and we appreciate that. Okay, so we have a Bible, the book, and the board. And if you want to see my notes, they're printed in the book. And you'll be able to see whether or not I follow them. Sometimes I follow my notes, sometimes I don't. But if you care to turn there, it's on page 6. And the title of my message is Building a Better Future Now. We'll focus on the now part and what we can do to build a better future now. We've had a number of messages around that theme and the fact that while we await something that we cannot create, that is beyond our imagination in how good and peaceful and glorious it will be, there are things that we can do now and need to be doing now in order to be able to embrace that when that time comes. Point number one is this. If we are to create a better future now, then we need to embrace God's provision and rely on Him. And that is counter culture, counter human nature. We want to rely on me, myself, and I. And I mean, I think that's something that we all struggle with at times. So let's go to a scripture. What I'd like to connect to is the fact that all of this connects, and we can live this out at the Feast of Tabernacles in an intentional way that will then hopefully spill on into, as we get into the year and we leave this place. That was a good question last evening. What about this place where God has placed His name? Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. I always like to read verse 1. I know you've heard it. I know you know it. But it's important to read it, to speak it. I think there is something about the spoken word that we do not fully understand, that has power. And these words have power. And the Lord spoke, it says, to Moses on the mount, saying, you in turn speak to the children of Israel. So Moses' function was simply to deliver what God had spoken to him. He was not speaking his own words. He was not making this up. He heard it directly from God. Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. The word convocation is a old English word that we don't use in common usage. It is, in actuality, a holy gathering where people get together and assemble and feast. But the most important thing here is, these are my feasts. This is not a feast of the United Church of God. This is not a feast that the Jews invented. This is not, even in the strictest sense, a festival for the Israelites, although that's mentioned here. And we know that because I always like to say, okay, so it says Israel here. Why is this not a feast specifically for Israel? Well, that's where it started. So how do we know? Well, go read Zechariah chapter 14. And what you see there is in the millennial reign, people will be coming up to Israel, to Jerusalem in particular, and it mentions the families that are coming up. And when they don't, and we'll turn to that a little bit later, bad things happen. They don't have any rain. We didn't have rain here for a number of weeks, so I was very grateful for the rain on the first day. The baptismal on the roof, well, now that was something that people will tell stories about. You know, do you remember that year, you know, when I was 16 and we were in Walnut Creek for the feast and they brought the fire department out to pump water off the roof? And you're 67 years old and your grandchildren go, huh? The fire trucks? Yeah, the fire trucks. Okay, turn over a page to Leviticus chapter 23, and we'll begin reading in verse, well, let's see here. Let's begin reading, first of all, in verse 42. You shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feasts of the Lord. So this is under this point of embracing the provision and reliance on God, the wilderness experience for the Israelites was to teach them that lesson. Can you imagine 600,000 men in a wilderness, not including women and children and the foreigners that traveled with them? I mean, that's a lot of people. Mr. Hemsley mentioned 12,000 people, and you know, many of us remember those large gatherings, but 600,000? And they didn't have air conditioning. I was teasing my Amish friends. And by the way, just by way of clarification, they are ex-Amish. So, I mean, they've acculturated and all that. But they were setting up their site. I was on their group text. And, okay, do you need electric? Do you want to hook up? Are you bringing a tent? Do you a trailer? And they're going back and forth, and I chimed in and said, guys, what's all this thing about electricity? You didn't have it not that long ago. Neither did the Israelites. How authentic are you going to be? And they laughed. It's not been that long ago. Although, again, this is not in my notes, just in case you're reading the book. This is a bonus. There has been a sea change here in the community in about the last 5 years. So most of the old order Amish homes are now fully electrified, not connected to the grid. But we have the highest concentration of solar panels anywhere in the country. if you go drive through the community. So, and then the other big change that's happening is electric bikes are fast replacing the iconic horse and buggy, which is kind of a shame in a way, if you're nostalgic. But so the question becomes, you know, I'll answer the question on electricity, and you know, why all of a sudden has that happened? Again, it's been about a 5 year, maybe started about 8 years ago, but in the last 5 years it really took root. And there's actually I think a very logical explanation to that. The issue of being connected to the grid wasn't so much the technology as being dependent on an outside source for your major source of power. The conundrum that we have in the culture here is it creates a tension. There is a tremendous, from a cultural standpoint, a tremendous amount of independence in a community that's very interdependent. And so now that God can generate my electricity by virtue of having a panel on a top and I don't have to be connected to the grid, it's consistent with the culture and has been adopted very quickly. And the women say, thank you. I have a Vitamix machine on my kitchen table. The women are happier. So that's some change that is going on. And you know, to be honest, I mean, they have the same struggles we do. You know, how do you connect my point here with reliance on God when I'm so independent? Okay? If you understand a little bit about the culture. By the way, somebody asked me about this. There is the Mennonite Information Center. It's called Behalt. It's in Berlin. If you want to have a really quick history lesson about the Anabaptist movement, which constitutes Hutterites, Mennonites, and Amish. The Amish are actually the youngest version of it, and their 500-year history, go to Behalt. It takes about an hour, and they have a 265-foot cycloramic painting. I think they have 1,500 identifiable people on the painting. So it's a remarkable thing to see just from an artistic standpoint. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8 has the distinction of being the most oft quoted chapter in the New Testament. And we're going to read sections of it here. Maybe we'll read the whole thing because I think it really speaks to this point. In verse 2, and you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way through these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandment or not. You see, it's always been a matter of the heart. They were hard, heart-headed. And had, as we read, an uncircumcised heart. Verse 3, so he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That rings familiar, doesn't it? I mean, it's in the context of the 40-year journey through the wilderness, which we read back in Leviticus chapter 23, they are to dwell in booths to remember that. So when we're here at the Feast of Tabernacles, we look both back to the temporary nature of our journey and forward to the permanence that we will all have in the message of the eighth day. You know, God comes down to tabernacle with men, and then you have a greater permanence. Actually, they were only to dwell in booth for 7 days, so I don't know, maybe we have to take down our booth at the end of the 7 days just to make that point, to show that we are moving from something that is, let's go to Matthew chapter 4, actually. Matthew chapter 4, and we'll see that Jesus Christ, in a very critical moment when he was being tempted, quoted Deuteronomy chapter 8. Verse 2, and when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry. I mean, that must be the understatement of the New Testament. He was hungry after 40 days? I mean, I'm hungry after 24 hours. Now when a tempter came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. And he responded, as should we, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So we see all these connections. You know, I think it was Dr. Jordan Peterson who has created this graphic that looks like a whole bunch of fiber optic laser connections. And, you know, you'd probably Google it and find it, where he connected the Old and the New Testament. So Jesus, when he was at his hungriest, read back to the tempter, it is written, you shall not live by bread alone. Continuing here in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 4, your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell those 40 years. Now, wouldn't that be great? I mean, we can learn from this. Yes, we need to do what we can with what we have, where we are at. No, we need to do all we can with what we have, where we are at. But in doing so, we must always embrace God's provision and rely on him. Verse 5, so you should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord chastens you. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of hills and valleys. There was a group, some of the young people that were here last night just came back from a trip to Israel. They have a couple that's living in Israel, I guess you can call it permanently, and they have a few projects going on. So they were there for a little bit over a week, and one of them got baptized in the Sea of Galilee. No, actually, two of them got baptized in the Sea of Galilee, and I know these young people, a little bit of their backgrounds, and it was very special. And then another young couple, I mean, just so that you know, Nate, you got engaged underneath a covered bridge. They got engaged on the Temple Mount. So Kate Wengard and Caleb Beachy, both of which were here last night, did that on that trip. But I'm digressing here, as you can tell. The reason I brought that up is they also planted 7,000 vines, grapevines, in the time that they were there. I was like, how do you plant 7,000 grapevines in a week? And they said, oh, it only took a couple days. So I'm not sure how they did that. They also planted several thousand trees. And the reason that they're doing that is as the vegetation is replanted and irrigated, the land is being restored back to what we read here. Because anybody that's been to Israel knows that brooks of water, I mean, what you're reading here is not the way it was, certainly not in the 50s, but it's changing. And continual work is being done to bring it back to its original state. The Romans destroyed it. They literally salted down portions of Palestine, now known as the land of Israel, so that the Jews couldn't grow stuff. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of valleys and hills, and a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. God intended those resources to be used. When you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and judgments and his statutes, which I command you today, which is precisely what they did. Because they forgot to embrace God's provision. It gets worse. Lest, when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness in which were fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought the water for you out of the rock of flint. Imagine that. You know, you go and you strike a rock and water flows out in abundance. But they would forget that. And they did. Who fed you in the wilderness was manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you, and that he may test you to do you good in the end. And then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. You know, this is a phenomenon that I fear, you know, we have the political movement today, make America great again, okay? Okay, I mean, there are a lot of elements of that that is better than the woke direction that we had been going, for which I'm thankful. But the downside is this, and it's just as real. The affluence and the power with which God, I believe, has blessed the descendants of Abraham to keep his promise is not because we're that great. Because God, in spite of our iniquities, is simply fulfilling a commitment he made to Abraham thousands of years ago. So let's not forget that. We can't do anything in a particular meaning, but we can't. And what plays out on a national scale is simply a macrocosm of what is in the hearts and minds of the countrymen. What we can do something about is that we do not forget that it is God who has given us blessings and wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I will testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. Point number one, if we want to make our better future now, there's a lot we can do, but we must first and foremost embrace the provision and reliance on God. Point number two, cultivating joy and thanksgiving. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 14 and 15. And you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son, and your daughter, and your manservant, and your maidservant, and the Levite, and the stranger, and the fatherless, and the widow who are within your gate. I don't know about you, but that's pretty all-inclusive. And I think last evening we experienced some of that. Although I wouldn't call my relatives strangers. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce, in all the work of your hands, so that you shall surely rejoice. So during the time that we are here, no matter what your situation is, put that behind you for a moment and let's cultivate joy and thanksgiving. No matter what your lot, and I know many of you and all of us, including us, have our crosses to bear and difficulties and painful situations. But while we're here, let's be joyful with our sons and our daughters, our manservants and maidservants, and the Levite. So it was mentioned, you know, if you want to see how superb canning lids are made, you can do that at one. We have a number of quote-unquote manservants and maidservants, to use the old term. But we always try to make the time of the feast special, so we bring in food. And because it's a disruption for them. So in the middle of one of our busiest times, you pull out in the fall 4 days, depending on how they fall. And then there are about 7 or 10 of us, which represents roughly, not quite 10% of our workforce. So you have a reduced workforce, reduced schedule, and if customers find out about it, then they order more. It's called a blessing. So what we've tried to do in order to make that feel somewhat equitable is they, most of them don't understand our desire to keep the Sabbath. It's our deeply held conviction. So to make that equitable, we pay them to not work. So the benefit to work at Superb Industries is you get an extra week of paid time off because we pay all of the holy days. So that just gives you some context in the event that you stop by and our people will show you around. Okay, over to Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 17. I was talking to Levi and hopefully you met, you talked, there was Levi, Vernon, Alan was not here last evening. They're just really sincere individuals that are genuinely seeking God, and they keep talking about this idea of what if all of the Amish would start keeping the feast? Pray. Don't see it happening, but they're pretty pragmatic individuals. So the goal here is to have a feast in this community of the sort that Nehemiah had. All right. Nehemiah was in my Bible this morning. Ezra, Nehemiah. We'll get there eventually. Here we go. Nehemiah chapter 8 is this great revival, and just wanted to read one verse. Verse 17, so the whole congregation of those who had returned from the captivity made booth and sat under the booth. We're sitting under a booth. For since the days of Joshua the son of Nun until that day, the children of Israel had not done so. And there was very great gladness. They did what God asked them to do that they consistently forgot down through time. And, you know, there really is nothing new under the sun. There really isn't. The keeping of the feasts of the Lord has always been done on a fractional basis. And it's only been at certain events like this that the Israelites actually kept them. So the fact that that's the case today shouldn't surprise us. And when you read this statement and you take it for what it says, I mean, it hadn't been done like that since the days of Joshua, the son of Nun. That goes back, that includes the time of David and Solomon and Hezekiah and Josiah, just to name a few. Now, if you look at the Hebrew, it says, in this manner. So it's not that they didn't, that David and Solomon and those people didn't keep the feast at all. They didn't do it with the same intensity, and they didn't, in this case, it seems like the building of the booth was a big thing, but it wasn't the booth. I mean, it's kind of like the discussion last night. Asking whether or not the Sabbath is a salvation issue is asking the wrong question. The issue here was not the booth, and I don't have anything against building booths. We should do that. The issue and the great gladness came from the fact that they just opened the book of the law, read from it, discovered that they are to do something, in this case, build a booth, and then they just did it. And imagine the impact if we would simply read our Bible and it says something, and we unhesitatingly, with no excuses, just do it. Think about how different the world would be if somebody would just read the Bible, pick a commandment, and decide, you know what? It says, don't steal. If people would stop stealing, it would negatively impact my sales at Superb Industries. I'll tell you a funny story on myself. So I went to buy that TV at Walmart the week before, and I went to self-checkout, and it had, and I had a kind of a harness on it that I was carrying it in one hand, and I had my bag in the other hand, and I walked through the exit door, and it was beep, 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 beep. I thought, okay. So I walked back to the guy that was checking out and said, I guess, and he looked at me, he looked at my receipt, and he said, you're fine, take out. So I walk out again, and it goes beep, 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 beep. And I said, well, that's strange. Okay, he said I could go. So I threw the thing in the back of my truck, and it wasn't until I was driving home that I had the presence of mind to remember there was this spider lock on it, the cables, you know, with an alarm. And I self-checked out. You have to have a magnet to release it to undo it. But you know what was worse? I was carrying it with that thing. But it gets even worse. I help design the device, and we make the components. Mr. Kellers, now don't tell me, John, it's going to get worse. He said it's going to get worse. I thought that was, you got to be kidding me. I was literally holding the stupid thing in my hand. And this is an anti-shrink device to keep people like me from walking out with stuff. And I was halfway home when I remembered, okay, that was not in my notes. You saw that, didn't you? Okay, point number three, spiritual growth and transformation. Spiritual growth? That, you know, spiritual growth, that's one of those words. I mean, I grow spiritually. You know, this is a spiritual matter. I don't know about you, but whenever I hear that, I almost cringe. Because usually, Usually that comes in a context where people are making excuses for not actually doing something physical because they're so spiritual. Now, there is spiritual growth, to be sure, but let's go to the Word and see how that works. Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23. This is how spiritual growth works, and it is a very tangible physical activity. Notice, verse 35, on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, a holy gathering, and you shall do no customary work on it. We can make food. We can do all kinds of preparations, but not the customary work that you do to earn your wages. That doesn't sound very spiritual. But that's how spiritual work is built. That's how we create a better future now. Everybody that's here, I'm convinced, and maybe you write this on the board or make it in your notes, you're going to go away here. I have full confidence. I have this visionary belief that you're going to walk away from these holy convocations, and you're going to be better in some tangible way. That's just how the dynamics work. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It's hamburgers. It's an offering made by fire. 7 days, I would have you know. I talked to Levi this morning. I said, Levi, we still have hamburgers. You didn't eat enough. And Henry said, I tried. I ate three of them. So they didn't know how many Susan had bought. On the eighth day, you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly. And you shall do no customary work on it. These are the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering and a grain offering, a sacrifice and drink offering, and everything on its day, besides the Sabbath of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, besides all your freewill offerings, which you shall give to the Lord. This is how growth works. You grow when you do. And when you do what God says, it will transform you. I'm looking forward to reading Charlie Kirk's book, Stop in the Name of God. I will confess I ordered two copies. And probably give, I don't know what his, I've seen some videos. It seems like if you look at the videos in which he's talked about the Sabbath, there was a progression, but one of the later ones was a pretty full-throated endorsement for doing no customary work on the Sabbath. Can we do something? Can we refrain from saying, well, but he doesn't understand this? Of course he doesn't understand something. And neither do we. There are things we don't understand. But we should, this seems to be something, there was a time, remember, when the disciples came to Christ and he said, we were out there preaching in your name, and there was this guy that was casting out demons in your name, and we told him, knock it off, because he doesn't follow with us. He doesn't follow with us. You know what Jesus said? Don't do that. You knock it off. Those who are not against us are for us. And sometimes we have been very blessed. Make no mistake. I believe with all my being that the Church of God has been blessed with the most cohesive, coherent framework of doctrine of any church since the first century. And I will defend that. But that doesn't make us any better than a whole bunch of other people. It gives us a whole lot more responsibility. And I'll lay out this challenge to all of us today. Who do you think God is going to be more impressed by? The individual who academically knew everything and could quote scripture and verse, or the person that knew something on a fractional basis and wholeheartedly walked it out? If you want to know the answer, read the scripture, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector that went to the temple to pray, and you'll find the answer. Point number four. I don't want to go there yet. Let's go over to Romans chapter 12. We can't drop that. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Wow. Work on that now. And the next day, and the next. It'll make your life better. I mean, these are, it says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That is where transformation first of all takes place, but we got to get it from our head to our heart. And the way that is done in a practical manner is to convoke every week. You can't be a one-man band, as aggravating as all the others can be. You might have to meet that, you know. You ever notice that? People can be genuinely aggravating. Except you and I. And sometimes I'm not sure about you. And if you believe that one, go ask Susan. You know, I've never aggravated her. I'm just this. The future now connection of that is the feast calls us to renewal and holiness. Each act of transformation today reshapes us into people who embody God's way, planting seeds of justice and mercy that prefigured the coming kingdom. Point number four, learning to build community and to serve. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16 and verse 13. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your winepress, and you shall rejoice. In your feast, you and your son and your daughter and your manservant and your maidservant and the Levite and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gate. This is, again, all-inclusive, and the point is to learn how to do this. I mean, it's, I couldn't have been more pleased. I mean, we had grill masters. We were cooking hot dogs. We were going to run out of water, so we ran out of water. Isn't it great to run out of stuff? Because that's how, you know, that challenges us, that stretches us to be better now. And, you know, if you look here, you and your son and your daughter, I think we've done a really good job of that over the years. I mean, the feast has been the highlight of the family, and my children and grandchildren. You know, if you do the feast right, Christmas is not the competition. Because the Feast of Tabernacles makes Christmas look like the cheap fake that it is. Right? Okay. See, we put on our, you know, this is great hat. What about your manservant and your maidservant? And that may not apply to most of you. What about the Levite? And then it gets really tough. The stranger. The stranger. The stranger. Those people, the stranger, blocked the door. Yeah, I think there's something for us to learn here. I didn't, this is not my idea. I mean, what about the stranger? I admit, you know, I mean, they let me in. I mean, I look a little bit strange. Or at least 40 years ago, I looked really strange when I walked into, I have pictures to prove it. It looked like I came from the Oddfellows Club. But that's not what this means. This is the stranger. There have always been strangers. I mean, if you look at the Old Testament, there were, what did they call it? Sorry, but only the German word comes to my mind, Peoplesvolk, that left, what were the people called that left Egypt with them? Mixed multitude. Okay, people that were not necessarily Israelites. I mean, and then the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates. Now, I'll admit, I mean, I had this concept, which is not necessarily wrong. I mean, the gates of the city and, you know, elders sit in it and you have that. And that's an accurate understanding of this, but at least in the margin of my Bible, there's a little number one footnote, and if I look in my margin, within your gates can also be translated within your cities, within your towns. And 4 years ago, when we came here the first time, it was actually some of the same people that were here last evening were pushing me if we couldn't do that because they wanted to learn more about it. And I read this and I thought, wow, this is a radical concept. These strangers from within your towns? So that's why you see the little signs outside, feasting and community. And so I think, I mean, we have that. I mean, here is, again, the people that were here last night, I don't consider strangers. But, you know, they don't, as the disciples said, follow with us. I mean, they're on their own journey of discovery, and I've chosen to support them in what they're doing. Deuteronomy 14, just a page back. Verse 24, but if the journey is too long for you so that you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put your name is too far from you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall spend the money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. I mean, this is a remarkable thing. Whatever your heart desires. I mean, that is a very unusual statement in the Bible. And I had an exchange with Levi. He was organizing this, and I was organizing this. He was organizing his, and we're texting back and forth. And I thought, you know what? So I called him and said, you know, the Bible says that we are supposed to do, this may surprise you, but they save their festival tithe. They've got that figured out, and I didn't teach them that. They figured that out on their own. So I said, you know, it says whatever your heart desires. I said, Susan and I desire to give you a gift to help you celebrate your feast. And he goes, whatever your heart desires? It says that in the Bible? I said, yeah. So I said, you have a Bible? He said, where does it say it? I said, no, you read it. Okay, so he went and got a Bible and I said, read Deuteronomy chapter 14, and I gave him the verses, and he read down through here, and he said, now I can't see where it's at here. In verse 26, and you shall spend the money for whatever your heart desires. Now, if you know anything about, you know, Amish and even different personalities, they're pretty frugal, okay? You shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. And he read that and he said, God's wild. Oh, I laughed. And he said, John, last year I did wine tasting. And I said, yeah, I know. And I said, you didn't know this was in the Bible? He said, no. I think I got out ahead of God here. But so then he texted out, read Deuteronomy 14, verse 26, God's wild. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 2. And we're going to wrap this up here. Philippians chapter 2. You know, learning to serve and build community. I think verse 3 cannot be overemphasized. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. And let this mind be in you, which also is in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God. This is a real conundrum. Jesus was the express image of his being. He was literally the Son of God. And he fully embraced that identity. At the same time, he made himself of no reputation, taking the form of his servant and coming in the likeness of men. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross. If we want to create a better future now, this is the recipe. Looking out not only for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Nothing being done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind. I have a long way to go. What about you? You know, the Future Now Connection, Sukkot, demands inclusion and care for the vulnerable. Practicing this today builds communities marked by compassion and equity. That's a really complicated combination. Compassion and equity. Equity is a synonym for justice. How do you administer justice in an equitable way? You don't play favorites. You find that out very quickly if you have 120 employees. Some who are in the church and some aren't. That creates another level of complexity. You have to treat everybody the same. And that's hard. That's tough. And be compassionate. And tough. And tough. I'll just share one thing that I've found to be effective. You know, you if you want to lead people, you have to keep things simple enough that people can remember. You can never expect people to follow something they can't remember. Hi, Gail. Raise your hand. Gail is here today. Gail works for us as a values coach. She's been very valuable to us. But one of the things that we teach, all new employees get an hour of power with John. Forget the name's not that important. We talk about our values, which, to the best of my ability, I've tried to build it around biblical values. And that could be pretty boring for, you know, a mechanic. Values. You know, give me a screw and a hammer and a wrench. Let me put stuff together, this value stuff. Well, here's what they will understand. Or as I put it, will understand. I tell them, look, when you walk through that arch, we want you to embrace our values, not because of us. We want you to embrace them because it's going to be better for you. But at the end of the day, if you forget everything else that I said, remember this. Don't ever lie to me, because if you do, you're going to get walked out of here, and I will slam the door behind you, and I will not even feel sorry. And then you get eyes about this big, and you recognize they won't forget that one. I have fired more people for lying than any other infraction. And I will do that unapologetically in a heartbeat. And the reason is this. We have a very competitive business. We make millions of parts for the automotive industry every year and on razor-thin margins. We don't have time to have an organization where you can't trust your neighbor because he's lying. And I explain then, okay, what I mean by that. I'm not talking about making a mistake. In fact, I encourage mistakes. We give awards for mistakes, okay? I'm talking about blatant, looking you in the eyeball, lying. And I can give you a long list of those, including one just recently that looked us in the eye and said, we said, look, we're going to do a drug test because we're a drug-free environment, and we're going to do a hair follicle test. No problem. Until the test results came back. Now, here's what people do. They call off the day that the positive test comes back, and they have all kinds of excuses and stories, and that's when you know you just met a really good liar. And then you're done. That makes a big difference, and that's only one. That makes the future better now. That's only one of the Ten Commandments. You know, stealing, of course, is another one, but all liars. Dr. Ward said this, I remember where I was sitting in the auditorium when Dr. Ward said, all liars are thieves, and all thieves are liars. And I remember sitting there and thinking, Doc, all? I mean, surely there's an exception. Surely there's a thief that's not also a liar. As I stand here today, that has been proven time and time again. All right, I'm going to read the conclusion here, and then I'm going to shut up. The Feast of Tabernacles teaches us not just to look forward to God's promised future, but to practice it now, trusting his provision, rejoicing with gratitude, pursuing renewal, and serving others makes the kingdom real in the present, creating a better future now. Have a great day.